Good morning. This is Wendy Bauer reading to you today from the Decatur Herald and Review. It's April 25th, 2016. And we will begin on the front page with an article, All of a Sudden, It's 1955. Begins with a photograph of Jim Bowling of the Herald and Review of Kent West, who restored his 1955 Chevrolet Bel Air to surprise his wife, Leah West. The article, by Tony Reed, is from Decatur. Kent West never lost faith in the sure and certain hope of the resurrection. It just took a few Easters to come around, 34 to be exact, as 1982 was the last year the object of his adoration had moved among the world of men and showed signs of life. But finally, on this Easter Sunday just past, he was ready to reveal the secret he had managed to conceal from his wife, Leah, their rusted-out, clapped-out 55 Chevrolet Bel Air convertible was back from the dead. Restored from the ground up and dazzling in its two-tone regal turquoise and ivory paint job, West had the car outside when he interrupted a family dinner to suggest his wife slip out so they can go for a ride. More than somewhat annoyed, Leah West reluctantly agreed and was confronted by a dazzling slice of Americana she had thought was still in storage as a hunk of junk. "What a surprise," she says. "It didn't even look remotely like the same car. I was absolutely astounded, and people just started flocking out of nowhere to look at it. And now, when you are out for a ride in it, people are like constantly flagging you down and waving. Everybody loves it." Figuring out exactly why everyone is in love with it is probably the material for a doctoral thesis in anthropology. West says nostalgia drives at the heart of the phenomena, kindling our burning love for a rolling artifact from the middle of America's century, a simpler time when I Love Lucy was on the black and white TV and the nation's hopes, incomes, and prospects had hit overdrive. And yet, it also goes deeper than that and touches those for whom even their parents weren't a glimmer in anyone's eye back in the day when Eisenhower was president. I go down the street and I see these little kids, these 12-year-olds, and they are like, "Hey man, 55 Bel Air, cool," says West. "It's history. It's history everybody likes." Let's take a quick drive through this particular 55's past. It was number 14,000 on a production run of just 41,000 and was sold through the L. Bauer dealership in Decatur. West, who is 65 and grew up in the city, was a neighbor of the original owner and remembers going for some hair-raising rides in it as a little kid. The woman behind the wheel, who might have been the inspiration for the Beach Boys' Little Old Lady from Pasadena, drove like the devil. Her nickname was Jet because she was always flying down the road, Wes says. She'd fly down Wood Street and never stop. She didn't believe in stop signs. We kids thought it was so much fun. West, who has identical brothers Kevin and Kim, born 10 minutes apart, clubbed together their lawn mowing money, it took 3 weeks of their combined earnings, and bought the car for $150 when they were 16. They shared it among themselves, which made for some interesting scheduling conflicts on dates, but by common consent, West ended up with it because he was the most diligent about maintaining it. The car stayed with him through his college years and gradually declined into disuse and rusty repose. West never gave up on it, however, always intending to restore it, and the businessman towed it around as he worked in various parts of the state, hauling it as far as Chicago as his addresses changed over the years. Later, when car and owner returned to their Decatur hometown, West decided, like Elvis, that it was now or never, and his hand was tipped by discovering a vast bank of talent for hire who could make resurrections happen. Work began in May after he lined up car enthusiast Mike Hoskins to handle body and paint, while Donnelly Automotive Machine rebuilt the V8 engine to factory specs. Decatur upholstery maestro Bob McQuality, of Max Custom Interiors recreated the white rag top, while Decatur's OK's Transmission Service put the vehicle back in drive. What amazes me and seems unique is all the places I've been, and yet it's here, in and around Decatur, that we've got all these wonderful and talented people, West says. He helped out himself with a lot of the grunt work, like sanding and metal polishing, and estimates he's dropped $15,000 on making the Jets Chariot roar again. He raided an old retirement account for the money, hiding the expenses from his wife and rushing out to intercept the delivery man whenever big packages, such as recreated chrome trim panels, showed up at the house. I felt bad because I was not telling my wife the truth, says West, who would hide his packages in the attic. She kept saying to me, "You've got to do something with that car." And I guess in the end, I felt better about what I was doing because I knew I was going to surprise her. Now the couple are getting ready to hit the car show circuit and have some fun going to drive-in movies and recapturing a sense of that whole 50s thing. West is, or, of course, happily married and knows that he must only use the powers of his resurrected car for good. He does, however, remember what it can do in the wrong hands. "Yeah, you put that top down, and man, girls just go nuts," he says, suddenly off cruising memory lane's romantic two-lane blacktop. "They got that sun beating down on 'em, and it always changes their mood." And then, also from the front page, Lake Future Big Worry in Clinton. Clinton Lake's status uncertain if nuclear plant closes. Under federal law, nuclear reactors that are decommissioned must be returned to greenfield status within 60 years. Also under federal law, greenfield status is defined as an endpoint where a parcel of land that had been in industrial use is restored to the conditions existing before the plant's construction. Under that definition, within 60 years of the closure of the Clinton Power Station, the 4,900-acre lake, now used as a cooling source for the plant and a popular tourist destination, would have to be restored to marsh and farmland. "Honestly, nobody is certain what would happen to the lake," said plant communications manager Brett Nauman. "It's a great question," added Ted Stoner, the plant's vice president. Clinton Lake was built to cool the nuclear power plant owned by Exelon Nuclear. The company owns the lake and spillway, but the waterway is managed by the Illinois Department of Natural Resources. Natural Resources officials declined to comment on the lake's future, but did say the Clinton Lake State Recreation Area drew an estimated 948,335 visitors in 2015, the second most of any state recreational area. The lake features a 1,000-foot sand beach and is a popular spot for swimmers, boaters, and fishermen who regularly pull in crappie, catfish, bass, and walleye. "Tourism related to the lake is such an important thing for Clinton," City Administrator Tim Folliwell said. "The lake means a lot to our local businesses and residents. I can't imagine DeWitt County without the lake," added Clinton Chamber of Commerce Executive Director Marion Broussard. "I also can't imagine what it would do to DeWitt County." Nauman said Exelon officials are hoping to keep the plant open for the long-term future and also are concerned about what happens to the lake if it does close. "We certainly recognize the community benefits of the lake, and I know there would be a lot of discussion about that," he said. "But as for saying certain what would happen, we don't know." Further news from the front page, changes sought for states holding inmates in solitary. This is from an AP writer, Ivan Moreno, from Springfield. Brian Nelson's years in solitary confinement left him terrified of other people, and he says he can still taste the concrete dust from his cell, even though he's been free since 2010. The 51-year-old is afraid to ride the bus. He takes 5 psychotropic drugs and sees a psychiatrist every week. Even when he's at a park surrounded by grass, he says everything starts turning gray, and he remembers how tiny air pockets in the walls kicked up dust whenever he'd clean his cell at a now-shuttered maximum security prison in Tams in Illinois' southern tip. There he was confined for the final 12 years of a 26-year sentence for murder and armed robbery. "Those four walls beat me down so bad," he told members of an Illinois House committee during a recent emotional hearing on the state's solitary confinement practices. Stories such as Nelson's have led Illinois lawmakers to push prisons to restrict the use of solitary confinement, joining a national movement that has policymakers rethinking the long-standing form of punishment that critics say has a profound psychological impact on inmates. Legislation sponsored by Democratic Rep. LaShawn Ford of Chicago would limit solitary confinement to no more than 5 consecutive days and 5 total days during a 150-day period. That would be a dramatic change from the current rules, which allow prisons to isolate inmates for weeks or years at a time. The bill, which got the House committee's initial approval Wednesday, would also require prisons to allow inmates in solitary to spend 4 hours per day outside of their cells. The measure awaits a vote by the full chamber. "If a bill like this passed, it would be a real milestone in solitary reform," said Jean Casella, the co-director of Solitary Watch, a Washington, D.C.-based group that monitors the use of solitary confinement nationally. State corrections officials oppose the measure, telling lawmakers it would go too far and that they want the chance to change things on their own. "There are aspects, quite a few aspects of the bill, that seriously diminish the department's ability to separate the most violent offenders from the general population," said Mike Acheson, the chief of operations at the Illinois Department of Corrections. He said the department is in the process of finalizing new rules to reduce the use of solitary confinement. Ford expressed little faith in the department's pledge to make changes. "I'm committed to getting it right, but I'm not committed to waiting for you to do it right," he said at a hearing. In Rhode Island, legislation is pending that would limit stays in solitary confinement to no more than 15 days at a time. In 2014, Colorado stopped placing inmates in solitary confinement if they have mental illness, and last December, New York agreed to reduce its solitary confinement population as part of a settlement that U.S. District Judge Shira Scheindlin called historic. The judge cited literature saying inmates in solitary exhibit symptoms including hypersensitivity to stimuli, hallucinations, increased anxiety, lack of impulse control, severe and chronic depression, appetite and weight loss, heart palpitations, sleep problems, and depressed brain function. As many as 82,000 inmates are in solitary on any given day, according to the National Conference of State Legislatures. Illinois had about 1,978 inmates in solitary confinement as of April 14th for disciplinary reasons. Another 148 are there for their own safety or other reasons. The state has an estimated 45,000 inmates overall, meaning Illinois is just over the daily national average of 4.4% for prisoners in segregation, according to federal data. Illinois opponents of solitary confinement say many inmates are put there for minor infractions, but the most recent breakdown available, which the state provided last year to the Uptown People's Law Center, is from 2008. The group, where Nelson now works to help inmates find legal representation, is suing Illinois over its use of solitary confinement. The 2008 figures show that out of the 12,332 inmates placed in segregation that year, nearly a third were punished for violating rules or disobeying an order. Acheson told lawmakers that he agrees the system needs to be improved, but he insisted that segregating some inmates is necessary. "We have an obligation to protect other offenders," he said. And on the local pages, an article from Valerie Wells, Herald and Review staff writer, "Hope and Heritage begin behavioral health partnership. Crossing Healthcare already serves 85% of Hope Academy students. As part of her job, Crossing CEO Tanya Andrix contacted Hope Principal Henry Walker and asked to meet with him and get to know the school and its needs better. I got to see the school and talk to the nurse and find out what issues are facing this student population, Andrix said. In that conversation, one of the things that was brought up was the health issues that they really need more resources to address. Because of my knowledge of our programs, Heritage Behavioral Health Center, and the Macon County Mental Health Board, I felt they'd be best suited to assist. She helped Hope make connections with the right people in those organizations, and with the blessing of the Decatur Board of Education, Heritage and Hope will begin a partnership in May. We're going to provide services to our students who we feel would benefit from the help of a behavior counselor, Walker said. Heritage will provide a mental health counselor that will be housed at Hope and will provide space for that person. They'll offer ongoing services for students and the family throughout the year in the hopes that it will continue over the summer. Parents and guardians will have to fill out and sign consent forms, and the services will be extended to the family as well. Students who are struggling in school and at risk for failing due to health issues, environmental or family factors that affect their behavior, will be referred to the Heritage Counselor by school staff, primarily the nurse and school social worker. With so little time left in this school year, Heritage President and CEO Candace Clevenger doesn't expect to get much done until school reopens in August, but the plan is to establish a social worker on site. Students will come through the system and become a client and receive services from us, she said. If there's any need for medication, that's where Crossing will come into play. The hope is to increase access to mental health service for children in Decatur schools, possibly throughout the district eventually, if untreated mental health issues and needs are dealt with, she said. Therapists are already available and visit other district schools as needed, and in case there are more children at Hope in need than one therapist can handle, Heritage will provide extra therapists. Then, an article from Mattoon by Rob Stroud, a Lee News Service writer, Mattoon Charleston Trail Fund Plans. An application is in the works for grant funding to pave the gravel portion of the Lincoln Prairie Grass Trail between Charleston and Mattoon. The two cities plan to apply for federal funds administered by the Illinois Department of Transportation. The grant also would help pay for extending the trail west to downtown Mattoon and creating routes from the trail to sites in both cities, including Sarah Bush Lincoln Health Center. Charleston City Planner Steve Pamperin said the improvements to the 20-year-old path will provide a more transportation-friendly route for bicyclists and pedestrians from Eastern Illinois University in Charleston to the Amtrak station in downtown Mattoon and to shopping, healthcare, and other destinations in between. Mattoon is scheduled to hold a public meeting about the grant application and a related funding request during the Public Works Advisory Board meeting at 5:30 p.m. Tuesday in City Hall, 208 North 19th Street in Charleston. They will conduct a second public meeting at a later date on the grant application for the trail paving project. Public Works Director Dean Barber of Mattoon said the cities will seek approximately $800,000 from the Illinois Transportation Enhancements Program for the trail paving and other work. He said each city will provide approximately $100,000 in matching funds for the grant. Barber said that the grant would pay for placing an asphalt surface on the crushed limestone portion of the trail from Logan Street in Mattoon to East Street in Charleston. This grant-funded project would also extend the west end of the trail in Mattoon from 10th to 16th Streets. This will connect the trail to the YMCA, downtown Mattoon, the Amtrak train depot, the Greyhound bus station, and Dial-A-Ride bus stop, Barber said. In addition, Barber said this grant would pay for connecting the trail to the Cross County Mall. Plans call for extending a 10-foot-wide asphalt spur from the trail to Richmond Avenue and Holiday Drive on the west side of the mall. The Transportation Enhancements Program grant would also cover extending bicycle lanes along Loxa Road and County Road 800 North to Sarah Bush Lincoln and the Lifespan Center, and connecting the trail to the Lincoln Douglas Debate Museum at the Coles County Fairgrounds in Charleston. Barber said these connections will provide trail users with access to additional parking, restrooms, drinking water, and temperature-controlled areas where they can rest. In Charleston, the Transportation Enhancements Program grant would also be used to connect the trail to the downtown business district and to Eastern via bike lanes on 6th and 7th Streets. The sum of these improvements would be a direct bicycle route from EIU to the Amtrak train depot in Mattoon, Barber said. And Sharon Barraclough for the Herald and Review writes from Shelbyville, U of I students tour Shelbyville Chautauqua. University of Illinois architectural student Eliza Lorini has traveled around the world and plans to take a job with a firm in Seattle after she finishes her graduate studies this spring in Champaign. Even so, she said she had never seen anything like the 100-plus-year-old icosahedron 20-sided building she toured as part of her historic preservation class. When you think of the technology they didn't have when they built this building, you really appreciate the craftsmanship and thought that went into building it, Lorini said. It really is something special. Lorini and other members of Paul Capp's class met with community volunteers working to preserve the Chautauqua building. Chairman Mark Shanks showed the group how support beams for the auditorium, that has no inside supports, had been strengthened and what future work needs to be done to ensure its integrity. "Anytime we get a chance to show this building off, we're glad to have it," Shanks said. "It's really nice, though, to talk about it with professionals who understand the significance of Shelbyville's Chautauqua." Capp said he seeks out unusual buildings in central Illinois for students to examine. The Chautauqua is interesting from a structural point of view, but also inside for the stage area and acoustics, he said. "Having a chance to learn about the history of this great old building also gives us an appreciation of the way it has stood here in the park for all these years." The Chautauqua group held a cleanup day last week and began painting the exterior. Future plans include a new roof, replacement glass, and upgrading the interior. In an effort to draw attention to the Chautauqua, supporters have booked dances, concerts, vendor fairs, and weddings for this summer. Capp said he hoped non-architecture buffs would appreciate the building's history. "It was an incredibly innovative building at the time it was built, and it's remarkable still," he said. "To have this here in our backyard, so to speak, is something I hope everyone values." And now from the local crime and courts page, Tony Reed brings an article. Body pulled from Clinton Lake. Police say the hunt for a missing Champaign woman turned into a death investigation Sunday afternoon after a body was pulled from Clinton Lake. Detectives who have been trying to find out what happened to Ashley Shamir Gibson, 24, say the remains had not been formally identified after the discovery at about 1:30 p.m., but the search for Gibson, who went missing a week ago, was changed to the death investigation status after the discovery. Champaign Police Department spokesperson Laisha Maydards said investigators working the case had gone to the lake and made the find. "Yes, the collection of evidence in this particular case is what led us to Clinton Lake," she added. "And so, yes, it's probable that it is her remains. However, we have to wait for the autopsy results to confirm that." The autopsy was scheduled for this afternoon. News reports following Gibson's disappearance April 17th describe police going door to door and concentrating their efforts around an address in the 1500 block of Hedge Road in Champaign. Gibson had last been seen there among a large group of people while visiting friends. She had been reported missing April 19th, and police had soon issued a statement describing Gibson as a missing and endangered person and that they were concerned for her welfare. Neighbors told Champaign news media they had seen what were described as bags of evidence being removed from a home in Hedge Road by detectives who blocked off the street and arrived with a crime scene tent, van, and bus. Champaign police are appealing for anyone with information about Gibson's disappearance to contact them. Call Crime Stoppers at 217-373-8477 or the police department directly at 217-351-4545. And from the local page, the week's schedule of government meetings and other activities of interest to the public in Decatur and Macon County include for today, Monday the 25th, Harristown Village Board of Trustees at 7 p.m. in the Village Hall, 185 North Kembark Street. Maroa City Council at 7 p.m., City Hall, 120B South Locust Street. NAACP Decatur Branch Executive Board at 6 p.m., Branch at 7 p.m., Dr. George Coates Community Center, 550 South Greenwood Avenue. The Whitmore-Oakley Multi-Township Board at 6 p.m. in the Town Hall, 204 West Bower Street in Oriana. Whitmore Township Board at 7 p.m. in the Town Hall, 204 West Bower Street, Oriana. On Tuesday, the Long Creek Township Board of Trustees at 5:30 p.m., Township Boardroom at 2610 Salem School Road in Decatur. On Wednesday, the Decatur City Council and Decatur Park District Board Commissioners Special Meeting at 5:30 p.m., Scoville Golf Course Banquet Center, 2909 West Main Street. The Macon County Board Transportation Committee at 5:30 p.m. in Room 514, Macon County Office Building, 141 South Main Street, in Decatur. On Thursday, the Decatur Traffic and Parking Commission at 4 p.m., Council Chambers, 3rd Floor, Decatur Civic Center, 1 Gary K. Anderson Plaza. And the Macon County Board Justice Committee at 3 p.m., Room 514, in the Macon County Office Building, 141 South Main Street, in Decatur. And the only item in the local briefs, YMCA Healthy Kids, the indicator. The 25th annual Healthy Kids Day will be at 9 a.m. to noon on Saturday, April 30th at the Decatur Family YMCA, 220 West McKinley Avenue. The free event will include water games in the pool, preparing and enjoying healthy snacks, a bounce house, and a blessing of the bicycles. The first 100 children will get a free Healthy Kids Day drawstring bag. And this is Wendy Bauer concluding the first half of the Decatur Herald and Review reading for Monday, April 25th, 2016. We will return with the second half shortly. Stay tuned.